Amen. All right, for those of you in the front row that want to remind me next week to start in verse 18, you know what to tell me? Okay. All right. Fantastic. Okay, this is called the afterburn. Okay. Welcome back. Sorry, caught somebody napping. All right, so this is the afterburn. Okay. And so if you have any comments or questions, you're welcome to go ahead and raise your hand. Here, Steve will come around with the mic. If you're on live stream, Manny will take care of those and ask them over to live stream. Ati has her hand up in the front here. Okay. And so we want to keep the comments and questions as best we can to today's teaching in part 24 here. But if you have things that are kind of connected directly enough, we'll kind of entertain those as well. Please don't be frustrated if you're on live stream and either Manny or Kurt or Rob, you know, direct you to a teaching to answer one of your questions that may not be about today's teaching, because that would be the same thing I would probably do if I took your question anyway. Because if something took me 15 parts to really answer, then my trying to answer it, you know, in 5 or 6 minutes is not going to do it any justice. So if you really want the answer, this is the challenge to you, by the way, to all of you watching, especially if you're new with me. How bad do you want the answer? If you want the answer, are you willing to listen to, you know, 16 hours or something or 12 hours or something to get an answer? Is it important enough in your life? Well, what if I don't like, well, if you don't look, listen to one part. If you like it enough to get more, listen to the second part. There's no obligation if you listen to one part to listen to all 12 of them or 16 or whatever it is. You know, it's not like a big commitment. I mean, most of you who started the Love and, you know, the Heart of the Matter teaching 64 parts, it's hard to stop, wasn't it, once you started getting going, because it was good stuff and you enjoyed it. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. But start in part one without the emotional overwhelm thinking, oh, you know, this, I just got here at 24. I don't want to go back and watch 23 parts. Well, if you like this one, you'll like the other ones just as much. Plus, you'll understand how we got here. It's a simple thing. Just try one. If you like it, go to the next one. All right.
Hi. Okay, so my comment slash thought was for John 15, verse 13. It says, no one has greater love than this than one should lay down his life for his friends. And growing up, like my high school time, I was going to a Southern Baptist church, and our thought, or what I was taught was that, you know, like our outlook on our friends who weren't believers is that they're all going to go to hell and we should feel really bad for them, and, you know, we need to go save everybody. This is me being kind of like very transparent, but I never thought that I never even considered putting my life like down for anyone else personally, if I'm being truthful. I never thought anyone was, even myself, like I'm not even, you know, like I've had my depressive sides before, but just to like give my life for someone else, I never really had that desire. And
that,
I always thought
that'll change when you have children. Except that once you have children, it's going to be kind of a back and forth between wanting to lay down your life for them or kill them. So,
I mean,
all the parents are clapping. It's sometimes a flip of a coin. It's just one of those.
The only people that I've ever considered that was just like my actual family, and never more so my friends. So I always thought there was like something wrong with me, but. Even today when you say that, I guess I still struggle with that, because not like no shame on anyone here. Like, you guys are all wonderful and great, but I'm just being, I guess it's something I have to work on. But
no, it's not just something you have to work on. We, as a group, do not have the ability yet or capacity to have that level of relationship. Okay. We've got too much junk that we're still dealing with to be able to get to the place where you can literally love one another enough to be friends by this definition to lay down your life. So don't hold yourself against that standard. None of us really has, well, I should say none, but most of us, I mean, I don't know if there's one, I don't want to say there'll be an exception out there, but most of us have just way too much junk that has to be dealt with before we can get to the place where we can have that kind of love. All right?
That's good.
Yeah.
And even as I was sitting and listening you say, I was kind of struggling. I was like, well, maybe there is probably another meaning, and this is just my opinion, but could it also be, because I know you talk about how we shouldn't be self-sovereign and that in ourselves we should be, you know, laying our lives down. So could it be in that kind of way where we're completely selfless to one another? Because that I can definitely do. But like you said, I guess we haven't had the capacity to reach that level.
Yeah, I mean, look, I didn't use the joke. It's not a joke, but the line I usually throw out there is like, you know, we're supposed to lay down our lives for each other. We can't even lay down like a pet doctrine or some sort of position for each other, you know. I mean, so we have got really, really poor measuring sticks for the things that we do in our relationships. And so this is like most of what we've been teaching over the last, you know, 10 years is a lot of resets of understanding the right approach to these things. So now your points are very well taken. I think everybody here can basically echo what you said. We all feel very similarly in some ways. I mean, with the exception that there are those of us that have either a spouse or child that we would easily step in front of whatever for them. Okay, but if you're single and have not had that, I know I wouldn't have thought that way either when I was single necessarily, okay? So, but you have children or you have a spouse, you'd be willing to say, no, take me, okay? And that's really what he's talking about, is the ability to say, don't take them, take me. And that's what Yeshua basically did for all of us, right? He said, don't take them, take me, okay? And that's what we're growing into, hopefully, is a Yeshua-like mindset and heart so that we'd be willing to say, don't take them, take me. This was the test of Moses, right? Moses, he said to Moses, hey, why don't I just wipe them all out and start again with you? He says, no, take me, don't take them. You know, it must be my fault. I'm the leader. I'll take the blame. Take me. Okay? All right. So next.
Yeah, actually, my question is a little bit related to Torah because I didn't get to ask that, but it's connected to what you talked about.
Ah, see, she's going to get that in anyway. I see. Right. All right.
So, right. Yeah, I couldn't. But what you were saying, that we have to love each other, you know, when we go to the kingdom, you know, something caught my attention when you were talking about how we're going to be busy in the kingdom. So this concept or application of loving each other is something that we need to acquire on this life or as we transition Abba willing in his compassion based on our Torah obedience, get to the kingdom. Is that something that we're going to keep learning as we do it forever with each other? And
well, look, I mean, he doesn't really give us a whole lot of clarity on the details of all that. We do know that even after discipling, yeah, Yeshua had to open their minds after he returned. Right. Okay, remember when he ran into them after the 3 days? And then he opened their minds to understand the rest of the scripture had to say about him and things like that. So I don't know how much is going to be through the discipling, how much he's just going to open our minds and how that works. And by the way, when it says open their minds, it doesn't mean that he didn't sit there and actually explain it all to them. I mean, we don't know what that means when it said he opened their minds, okay? And so I will guess that, you know, we will be learning pretty much continuously up to whatever point, because, you know, clearly Yeshua was interacting with the Father even at this point in their forever together when he was in the flesh suit and, you know, being shown some things, so.
And then the other one was 15:15. Actually, it starts on 14 where he says, you're my friends, if you do whatever I command you, and then no longer do I call your servants my friends.
Yeah.
But every time I think about, as a Christian, I guess, and even now, I think that we're supposed to have the servant heart. So how do you differentiate what is a servant versus what is a friend with a servant?
Okay, again, okay. See, this is good. This is why I like the afterburns, okay? Because they allow me to take something I said and now I can bring more explanation to it. All right, so I gave you a lot of little pieces of this. I didn't connect them together. When I was talking about the structure, remember I talked about how the higher up the structure, the more the servant you were. So think of the bottom of the structure where the actual servant is. He expects you only at that childlike level to do the mechanical things. I don't expect my child to understand all the whys with everything. Just do it because I said so. Do it because I know what's right for you. Do it, whatever, trust me, right? So the servant level, the higher up you go to the friend level and as you move up the ladder, doesn't ever take away the things that you should have had from the previous lower level, all right? So you're still going to approach him as a servant, but now as a friend, where the friend, as a friend, you now have a bigger, well, I shouldn't say bigger, you have a greater understanding of the bigger picture, okay? But you're serving in a higher capacity. So you're a servant with a lot more understanding, a lot more relationship, but you're still a servant. You know, Yeshua made it very clear. He is absolutely a servant to his Father. And he's a servant to the body. I mean, you know, so we all the levels up the chain are servants. Okay? And that's really the important thing. So, but it's gaining levels of relationship on the way up because you're gaining levels of understanding. And of course, the expectation that the higher up is expecting of you changes when you're a servant to the next level. Each level up, you have a greater level of expectation that has been placed on you. They expect more. Okay? I'm going to expect a whole lot more from a friend than from a servant. I expect the servant to do exactly what I told them to do. I expect the friend to do exactly what I told them to do, but also understand why I told them to do it. See the difference? Still a servant, but a servant with a greater level of understanding and relationship. So I still expect the same thing from the friend as the servant, but I expect that the friend is going to understand a whole lot more. Okay, does that make sense now? Okay, good. Okay, Shira's got a hand up in the back.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. This is so rich. I would like to talk about friends. this is so rich because as I think about that in verse 15, I think, you know, how much more enjoyable, you're talking about the joy, and richer when you become, start to become a friend and you really feel like you're part of the heart of the master. And the motivation with that closeness as it develops, I think the possibility of being able to lay down your life for a friend greatly increases.
Yeah.
I thought of Romans 8, 28 and 29 when you were talking about friends. Because I've often thought as a Christian before, I was a Christian, I'm not a Christian now, but verse 29, they skip over it. They go, oh, all things are going to work together for good. You know, you're called and you're, it's all going to work together for good. But when you read verse 29, it's about those called according to his purpose. And what's his purpose in verse 29? To transform us, to conform us to the image of his son. And a friend understands that goal. That's what I was hearing as you were talking.
Amen.
The friend understands his goal. It's the transformation and eventually the bride. And so they're reaching further. And I just want to share, speaking of friends, my dear friend Larry, who sends all of you his love and greetings and hopes to be with us next Shabbat. But he and I were talking last night on the phone about this whole idea of the vine. He has been gifted with a lot of experience with growing things and grapevines. And he shared with me something that really perked me, it really got my attention. He was talking about how the cutting off of the big branches of the vine, that kind of happens in the cooler weather after the growing season is over. But there's another pruning, and not all vine dressers do this kind of pruning, but those who really want the absolute best fruit will do what the Father does with us. He'll go do a spring pruning and start just the little stuff, all the little tendrils and suckers and leaves and twigs that aren't fruitful, that don't look like they're going to bear anything, those get cut off. And it's like a daily basis, an ongoing thing. If you really want to be 100-fold, you
right,
know,
right, right.
That motivation to submit every day to his chastisement, his pruning. And I experienced that this week when I really badly burnt some grilled toast, and the smell is still in my apartment. I ruined a pan, had to throw it out, my favorite pan. But I said, Father, what are you trying to show me? And he's been helping me understand, this is one of those little twigs, you know, in your life. I want your attention before it gets so it's sucking off the life that's supposed to go into bearing fruit. So praise Abba.
Amen. Amen. Okay, so I feel like I need to say something about friends also that kind of ties in with what we've been talking about and what Shira brought up, which is we're not talking about friends the way you and I would think of each other as friends necessarily, okay? We're talking about sort of a spiritual, well, a body of like body of Messiah level of friends. And the reason I say that is because, you know, this friend, this relationship doesn't get to tell the other friend what to do or how to do it, right? Because this friend is still a servant. This friend is within a structure. And this is being friends with people that are below you in the structure or above you in the structure. We're not talking about the horizontal friendships here, okay? That's kind of the problem that he's trying to address. Because we're trying to figure that out and understand it. And this also is going to play out once they got to the Jerusalem Council and James being in charge, and they had to learn to understand that it was his job to make decisions and how that was going to work. And so, you know, just keep that in mind, that these friends are not correcting the one above and telling them how they're wrong about what to do. There's a submission there. There's a servant level in this unique relationship we're talking about here. I'm not saying you can't do that on a horizontal level with your friends. You can talk to each other and run things back and forth and, you know, kind of prod each other into thinking and challenge their thinking, whatever it is. That's not what's going here. This is saying in that vertical structure, if you are my servant, I have tasked you to do something and that's all I've given you to do. If you are my friend, I've also now shared with you an understanding of why. What it is that's what we're doing, what's going on here, what's really happening. So it's a level of understanding your relationship within the vertical structure. This is not just talking about all friend relationships, okay? Just want to make sure that that's clarified, because you don't get to do certain things in this the way you would in your normal friendships, okay? All right, next. All right, Steve.
All right, I think before, 1 week earlier, and this came from your pre-discussion, I guess, and I thought I said, isn't love refined? Oh, wait. Isn't the more refined definition of what love found in the context of the fruit of the Spirit within the boundaries of Torah?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're going to eventually find out that the full way that we express all this is through our mechanical Torah observance, done in the framework of love, joy, peace, patience, etc., with the heart of it. So yes.
All right. And then Shira brought up something here, and you talked earlier about pruning. So I'm sure it hurts more to be a part of the pruning than it is to be pruned. So to me, that would, I would say, alert me, and I should watch my behavior in with the Father so it could demonstrate it with my brother. Otherwise, I would be a pruned part rather than pruned person.
Okay. All right. Look, and again, you know, there's going to be things that you need to remove from your life. Maybe people, maybe behaviors, maybe physical things, whatever. And those things are not always going to be without pain. I mean, there's going to be a sense of either loss or there's going to be some backlash about it, but there are things that you may at some point have to remove for your life. You know, some of you, because of your health conditions, have had to remove certain foods that you enjoy very much that you can't eat anymore. But, you know, understand that, this pruning, it's not only not fun if it's being done to you, but you may have to do some of it yourself, okay? And so, because this can be taken on all kinds of levels. On one level, you're the gardener, and you've got a garden that you're tending, and you want to get the roots out of it, make sure you're good ground for the parable of the sower of the seed. Are you good ground? And you want to get the rocks and the thorns and all the other junk out of that garden, you know? Okay? So there's lots of different levels that we could take this to. Okay, anybody else? Okay, Chris?
I had a couple things. The first thing is, I wonder if this friend, this vertical friendship, which I is very new to me as an idea, but it might connect to, like, with my job, I work and I have these duties. I'm a servant, basically, in the sense. I do this, this, and this, and this at work. And I'm still transitioning. I'm still learning actually how to do my job, but because it's very many different aisles of the store, and they all have different things. But at some point, I'll be able to understand the intention of what I'm doing, rather than just the rules of, like, this goes there, this or whatever.
You'll understand why it works better that way, why they put it there, why the choices to do it that way. Yes.
Yeah. So that was one thing, because I have to understand more generally how my store works, what they really want. And sometimes it's counterintuitive because it's not what they say, because they almost have something different that they intend. And so I'd be a friend to my supervisor by understanding that more than just being a servant. And then the other thing is when it talks about Abraham as, at least not in this translation because I looked for it, in James 2:23, it says that he was one loved by God. And in some translations it says a friend of God. So I don't know if there's anything you know about the Greek or
I'd have to go look it. I'd have to go look it up. What was the verse again?
James 2:23.
All right, I'll look it up. But the thing is, from what we've been talking about, you can see how they would be the same thing. Okay, in the context of what we were talking about, they would actually play out equally. All right. I think it's important, again, this is more resetting clarifications. So the friend relationship that we're talking about here, there's two aspects to it that I want to clarify, because Chris brought up something I think that's important to help maybe clarify that. There's one aspect with is him wanting to be a friend, so he wants to learn and understand what the person vertically up the line would like and desire. But remember that the actual friendship stuff is the one above choosing to share with. Okay? Because I have people coming here all the time wanting to be my friend. And then they get all frustrated when it doesn't happen. And it's basically because, just so all of you know, I'm very unfriendly. I'm antisocial and don't like people. But no, it's just that I only have a few friends. Now, as far as from this point of view, there are the people that need to. I do have the relationship where they understand where I'm trying to go and what I'm trying to do and that kind of thing. So it also has to do with the definition of friend. There are people that are coming here just thinking we're going to be like buddies, that kind of friend, and just hanging out. But understand that it says here, you did not choose me, I chose you. Okay? And I chose to share with you my vision, what I'm doing, where I'm going, what the purpose of all this is. So on the one hand, Chris, you are being prepared to be a friend to your supervisor, yet it's up to him to choose to share that information with you. But you're learning and observing the things that are preferences to that supervisor. Okay? And that's good that you're preparing, because so there's two sides to it. Are you preparing to be a friend? Okay? Look at Joseph. We just went through the Joseph story. You know, Joseph was available, paid attention, and was then usable by Potiphar, by the jailer, etc., because of his willingness to pay attention and be available to help in the various things that were going on. And then the other side of it was they had to recognize the value there and decide to make use of it, to take advantage of that opportunity. So you doing that, at some point your supervisor might say, you know, here's a young guy he's really hitting it and getting it done, and he's been paying attention not only to what I told him to do, but he's starting to understand why. And that may make you valuable, and he may want to share more with you about that. Okay, so there's two sides to this. Our effort to show the one above, hey, I'm open, interested, and available to understand and to do what you need me to do. I have a desire for that. If you want to show me, I'm not just here to just go, okay, I showed up at Shabbat, okay, I didn't eat pork, okay, whatever. It's just not like a checklist like that, all right? And so that's the spirit and truth part, okay? The relational part is you wanting to understand the fullness of the intent of it, not just the mechanics of it. So that's the same thing he's saying at his job. So he's showing that willingness and that desire. At some point, if not this supervisor, down the road, a supervisor somewhere he works will recognize that and want to cultivate it and then decide to be friend to him in this context, in a vertical structure context, and say, I'm glad that you're showing that. Come here, let me really explain to you how this works and why, and take you under the wing. Now we're in a discipleship thing. You see how that can work? Because they could decide to take you under their wing and say, here, let me really share with you and show you some things because I think you've got potential. And so that certainly is possible to come out of that. All right, live stream.
Okay, Johnny had a question here. Can you please explain how I or we can bear fruit? I'm still lost on how or what I need to do.
All right, if he tells you to do something and you do that, that's the fruit. The fruit is the action of taking the knowledge and putting it into action. So when he says to you, do not eat these things that Leviticus 11 tells you not to eat, and you go to the store and you actually look at the ingredients, that's a fruit of your understanding. Okay? And then when you make decisions to not buy certain things because you realize they're unclean, that's the fruit. Okay? So you have information. You then develop a relationship with the information, which means you've taken that information and decided to apply it, and then the fruit is the application. Okay? So you learned about Shabbat, and you were keeping Sunday, and you realized that Sunday was not the day of worship and the day for you to come together before the Father, that it was Saturday. So that was information that you had. You studied it. You started to have a relationship with the information and realized you needed to act upon it. The fruit was you switched from Sunday to Saturday. So let's just keep it that simple. You came to realize that Christmas was not something appropriate for us to be doing, and so you stopped doing it. That's fruit. You realized there were holy days you were supposed to be doing. When you started doing them, that was the fruit. Okay? So the fruit is simply the action based on the instruction of Yahweh that you're taking because that information has developed a relationship in you where you realize you need to do it.
Okay, next we have Anders Olson. Can Rabbi please expand on the relationship between truth and spirit and the connection to a servant and friend? They sound to be the same to me from today's teaching. Have not connected this before.
Oh, excellent. That's, I would say you nailed it. That was perfect. Okay? The truth and the servant are very similar metaphors for the basic straightforward mechanical things. And the spirit or fullness of the intent and the friend are understanding why and the depth of it. So good connection, Anders. Very good.
Awesome. Next one, Justin and Denise. Question, Rabbi 15, 9 through 10. The same as if you've seen the Father, you've seen the Son teaching. That's what I got from that, that it's about imitating the Yeshua and his love.
Absolutely. But let me just kind of expand this. It's not yet true necessarily the way it fully should be, but that's the whole discipleship goal, is that when you see the Son, you're seeing the Father. In other words, everything he does is a proper full representation of the one who trained him. When you saw an apostle, you should have seen Yeshua, which means you should have seen the Father. Because the apostle, who's now a disciple of the Messiah, is doing an excellent job of representing in a full way the discipler, Yeshua. All the way down to teachers today should be the same thing. Of course, we have not had a direct, intimate, one-on-one discipling like the Messiah did with his disciples and they did with the initial followers that came after that. But someone like me should be where you see Yeshua. Paul said the same thing. You see him, you should be seeing Yeshua. Imitate me as I imitate Messiah. You know, so you should see that. That doesn't mean that you're not also seeing a flawed human being, but you should be seeing from the instructions, remember, Yeshua didn't just say in the context of just everything in my life, like the way I eat my food and the way I cut it and whatever else and everything else I do in my life is what the Father does. But he says, look, my walk, the way I walk life, what I submit to, the halakha, all that stuff, everything I say in regards, that is perfectly matching the Father. Okay? I mean, the Father's not a physical being. The Father doesn't get dressed. So Yeshua didn't get dressed necessarily the way the Father does. Because when Yeshua was in a flesh suit, he got dressed. He did things physically. But he says, all that I do, meaning my walk, is in complete alignment with the Father. All that I say, and that's the goal of all of us, so that when you see us, you should see him. Of course, if you see us, you should see Messiah first, and you should see the Father second, because they are pointing you in that direction. All right, next.
Anna has a question here. How can we submit to husband or wife that does not respect the other party, or who don't know their whole role? Husband's supposed to help with children if wife can't do everything.
All right, look, there's the ideal of what we're supposed to have, and then there's reality of the dysfunction that we have, okay? And most of us, you know, I don't know why they talk about, you know, it's funny, you know, how people say, well, I came from a dysfunctional family. I said, oh, so you came from a normal family. Because dysfunctional is normal. Because everybody came from a dysfunctional family. So, but the same thing with marriages. Almost all marriages are dysfunctional on some level. And you have to deal with your marriage stuff, okay? So it's just like dealing with your parents. There's a respectful way to have an issue with your parents. There's a respectful way to disagree with them or not do what they say, whatever it is. Well, guess what? In a marriage, if you're struggling where one of the other is not doing what you believe they should be doing because of the relationship you have, well, two can't walk together unless they agree, and you clearly don't agree, which means that you have to now sit down and renegotiate your agreement. See, that's the problem, though, with most marriages, is that nobody really ever asked you to do that before you got married, to discuss whether or not you were in agreement on as many things as you can think of. When I do a wedding, I ask them to do that. Now, whether they do it thoroughly or not, I have no idea, because I don't ask them to submit a copy of it to me. It's none of my business what they talk about. I just encourage them to go over everything and anything they can think of in terms of their expectations. So if you have an expectation that your spouse is going to help more with the children, but you never actually talked about that, that means they never had that expectation, and you're not walking in agreement. So I would say you simply need to now sit down and say, look, this is an area we never really talked about before we got married. It's become a problem for me at this time. We need to talk about it so that we can find an agreement we can come to about this area of our life. And right now, that doesn't mean you have to, one gets to say, well, you need to do more. And the other one says, well, you know, I don't. And, you know, you sit there going, look, it has come to my attention that I feel like it would, you know, I'm really struggling with the fact that I'm doing all of this and you're not helping. And if you don't expect to help, then I need to know that that's really what you expect. And then we have a marriage problem. Or maybe the spouse says, well, I never realized that you were having that. And they're very willing to go ahead and help. You don't know till you discuss it. Now, if you've already discussed it and they made it clear, well, now you have a marriage problem. Okay, if you're not walking in agreement on how you're going to live life together and raise your children and everything else, you're going to have constant problems. You have to find a place of agreement or you can't really walk together. I'm not suggesting divorce. I'm simply saying is, you know, you've got to, you know, make it clear to the other person, I love you. I want this to work. But right now, this isn't working. We are in a dysfunctional thing. We are not functioning. Why aren't we functioning? Because we don't agree. By the way, it doesn't mean that either one is right or either one is wrong. It just means that they don't agree. There can be a husband and wife where the one takes care of all the things with the children and never expects a thing from the other one and vice versa, and it's fine. But they agree. In other places, no, I expect you to do this and I expect you that. But if the other person does expect it too, now you're not in agreement. And so you have one choice. And that is, well, you have two choices. I'll give you two choices. One is say nothing but stop complaining. I'm serious. If you're not going to do anything about it, then stop whining and complaining about it. Accept it. That's the reality you chose. Or say something, not disrespectfully, not angry. Don't do it when you're frustrated because he didn't help you with the kids or whatever it was. When things are relatively calm, sit down and say, look, it's become clear to me that there's one or two things in our life together as husband and wife that we're not in agreement on, and so we're not walking in agreement, and it's causing a challenge for me. And so I think we need to talk about it so we can figure out a way to come to agreement. Because I can promise you, I won't say every marriage, but most marriages, at some point, one or the other one will pop, and the other one will say, I had no idea. And the reason is because the one who popped never said anything. They just ate it for so long that they finally popped. And the person's like, but you never said anything. Well, I didn't think I'd have to say anything. Oh, goodness. I'm telling you, this is like every counseling session I have. So in case you're thinking I'm talking about you, I'm talking about all of you, okay? Everyone who's been married for a while knows that there's been at least one thing where one or the other one let it go and ate it for so long until finally it popped, and they don't realize the other person has no idea this has been driving you crazy. You assume that they know, but they don't because you never said anything. So when you approach your spouse, approach it from the understanding that they may not even realize this is a problem. Now, of course, if you've gone back and forth about it, they absolutely do. Now, so that's the other situation. One situation is where they don't know. Don't assume they do. The other one is you've already brought it up multiple times and you know they do. Well, then you have a disagreement. You need to figure out if you can come to agreement or you can't. If you can't, well, then you have two choices, divorce or just accept that reality. Those are your only two choices. You've already discussed it. You've negotiated. The other person said, no, I'm not doing it. Okay, well, then now what are you going to do? Okay, well, if you're not going to do it, I don't need to stay. Or if you're not going to do it, I guess I'll just have to live with it. Those are your only two choices. But acting all angry and walk around like you're sucking a pickle the rest of your life isn't going to work. Why let your joy be completely stolen over it? You can accept it, or you can fix it, or you could leave. I mean, there's only three choices, okay? Leaving should be the last choice. Make every effort to do the other things first, okay? I don't know why I keep looking over at Manny. I look at the cameras here, you know, because I keep thinking I'm talking to you because you read the question. I don't like talking to a camera. So I know people think that I'm making this way too easy or too hard or too flippant. Look, your life is your reality. And if you're, you know, if you're married and you're, you know, in your 40s or 50s, the way people live these days, you could be doing the same thing you're doing right now for another 30 years. Do you want to keep doing that for 30 more years, 40 more years? Some of you married in you've been married 8 or 10 years, you're only in your 30s, you got married young. You want to do that for another 50 years? I would go ahead and try to fix it so you don't sit there just, you know, because otherwise someone's going to cheat or someone's going to pop their cork or something's going to get real ugly. Deal with it. Well, he doesn't want to deal with it. She doesn't want to deal with it. Well, you only have another options then. Either ignore it, deal with it, as far as you dealing with it, if they're not going to deal with it, or threaten the only card you got. You only got one card to play, leaving. But don't use that card unless you intend to use it. They teach you that when it comes to self-defense. You don't pull that gun out unless you're intending to use it. Right? Isn't that what they teach you in every gun class? That thing stays in its holster unless you're intending to use it. So you got to think a lot about pulling it out. Well, same thing with the divorce card. Don't bandy that thing about and threaten it and everything. Just don't do emotional manipulation. I hate that garbage. That's despicable. Be honest with your spouse. If we can't fix this, I am willing to leave. But you need to be willing to leave. Don't pull that card out. But that's the way to communicate how serious you are. Okay? But I've heard a lot of people say, oh yeah, he threatens every other month to leave me. Well, that's emotional manipulation. That's not the way it works. Okay? If you've got a spouse that threatens to leave you all the time, next time you do it, show him the door. Say, I'm not playing this game anymore. But then he'll leave, or she'll leave. Well, then stop complaining then. You can't do both, okay? Because you know what happens when you complain? You're already miserable, and now you want others to be miserable because you're going to make us miserable listening to the nonsense over and over again. If you come to me, I'm just going to tell you, stop complaining. Fix it or stop complaining. That's it. I have zero tolerance for that. Fix it or stop complaining. But he doesn't or she doesn't. Well, then get divorced. Or fix it or stop complaining. There's two ways to fix it. You fix it or you get divorced. That's your two options. Complaining is not an option. Stop that. Okay? It's not healthy for you. It's not healthy for anybody. It serves no purpose. All right. I don't know how we ended up over there, but go ahead.
Okay. Next one. Maybe you'll understand this question better than me. Betty wants to know, can we in the 21st century truly understand the societal, emotional depth of the first century Jews during the time of Yeshua?
Not fully. I mean, we can glean a lot from, but you have to glean it from that side of it. You're not going to glean the Jewish mindset and the Jewish societal things from the time of Yeshua from a Christian author. Okay? You know, if you are, and you can fill in the blanks, you understand things from where you're from. Okay, if you're Mexican, you understand things different. If you're Italian, you understand things different. If you're Spanish, you understand things different. If you're Russian, you understand, then anybody who's not whatever that is. Okay? If you were Catholic and somebody else was never Catholic, they don't understand what it means to be Catholic. Okay? If you were Jewish and the person you're talking to has never been Jewish, they don't understand what it means to be Jewish. Okay? If you're a woman, you don't understand what it's like to be a man. If you're a man, you don't understand what it's like to be a woman. If you're white, you don't understand what it means to be black. If you're black, you don't understand what it means to be white. So to understand whatever it was, you really need to get it from somebody who understands that, who has a connection to it in some way. Does that make sense? Okay? So let's be careful that, you know, we're getting our sources from people that don't understand what that is. But can we truly fully understand it? No, we weren't there. And it's so different from the way it is today that we can't truly understand it. Okay? They lived under an occupying force. Rome was there. The types of religions that were being followed in those days don't match anything that we have today for the most part. I mean, the type of temples that they had and the things that were going on and the sacrifices and other things we can't relate to. The level of quality of life in terms of the amenities they had available to them and things that we have today, there's so many things we can't relate to. The communal way they live versus the way we live today, you know, there's not a lot today that matches up with that so well. So we would definitely struggle for those things.
Okay, next one is from Cynthia. She wants to know, John 15:5, can or could John 15:5 be connected with Galatians 5:22 because we are the branches?
Well, I mean, Galatians 5:22 is the fruit of the Spirit. So, you know, I would say, yes, that's the connection we've been trying to make here. Let's look at this for a second, see what the wording is there. Well, I guess it's just because it says the fruit. I mean, look, the fruit is the result. Okay? So the result of you being in the vine, the result of you guarding the commands is the fruit. The result of you embracing the fullness of the intent is the transformational fruit of Galatians 5:22. The fruit of the Ruach, the fruit of the fullness of the intent, is love, joy, peace, patience, etc. Yeshua says that right here in verse 11. He said he talked about joy. Joy is the second one listed in the 9 aspects. Right? Love, joy. So joy is a fruit that he's talking about in relation to, if you guard my commands, you'll stay in my love, and as I stayed in my Father's love, and I've spoken to you that your joy might, my joy might be in you, and your joy might be complete, and I want you to love each other. I mean, this is all part of that. Now again, the fruit of the Spirit as taught by the Charismatics and the Pentecostals, all the Christian stuff, whatever, is somehow a totally different thing. Like, somehow you get this Spirit and it bears this fruit. No. When you walk the Torah out, the walk out, in the fullness of how it was intended, you bear this fruit. Now, does that make any sense now to anybody? I mean, I don't know how much more clear I can make that. Mechanical behavioral fruit is, don't eat this, and guess what? You don't eat it. Now, you can still do it without joy, without peace. You can have, you know, be all mad that you don't get to eat whatever it is that you normally like to eat, but you didn't eat it. All right? You can do the mechanics with the wrong attitude, not because you don't embrace the fullness of the intention. The intention of trials is to bear the changes in your life that are positive so you can count a trial as a joyful thing. So that's how joy could actually be the fruit of a trial, because you recognize the fullness, like a friend gets told the fullness of something. So you understand why a trial's there, what its purpose is, what the intent of it is to do and develop out of you so you can have joy in that. So the fruit of having the full intention understood is love, joy, peace, patience, etc. Amen? Okay, next.
Okay, next one is from Anita. What is the line that separates codependency from obeying Yah's word about serving others?
Okay, so all the serving that's being talked about here is in the context of the vertical structure and Torah obedience, all right? So we're not talking about things that would turn you into codependency or enabling and entitling. We're talking about in the context of the scriptural structure and scriptural instruction. So you're talking about challenges with serving and meeting the needs and taking care of everybody around you, where you can certainly become codependent with them. There's no requirement to do that in here, okay? Remember it says you are a servant to whom you're a slave to whom you serve, right? Whether it's sin or whether it's righteousness. Okay, so Torah observance, righteousness, worldliness, sin. Or Torah disobedience, sin, either way. Next.
Geraldine has a question here. So if I want to have more capacity to lay down my life, would I have to have more heart surgery, in quotations, to implement it out of my friend, implement it to my friend? And who is my friend again?
Okay, we're going to explain that all in the next part, so we won't answer that question here. I did explain that the friend I'm explaining here is about the vertical structure. Okay? So you're talking about a relationship with someone that you would normally serve, and they're now going to take that to a higher level called friend. Now remember, it starts off with servant. So if this is not somebody that you are servant to, then the friend we're talking about here will never come into play. It's a relationship that starts off with servant, an obedient servant doing and trusting that whatever they're told to do is right, even if I don't understand it. As a friend, you will be now explained to you so that you can understand it. So now you're not only doing it because it's trusting that it's right, you're doing it because you understand why it's right. You understand why it's important. Okay? So let's understand that that's where this is coming from. Let me get back to the codependent and enabling person just for a second. This is really, really important, I want to say to all of you. And I want you to really knock this off. Not for my benefit, for yours. This is destroying it's destroying your shalom, okay? Do not allow the person you're interacting with to define the term. Your mother doesn't get to define the fifth commandment for you. Neither does your father. You need to know what that commandment means, but not from the person trying to get you to obey. Don't let the person telling you, well, you need to be a servant. Don't let that person who you're serving define servant for you just because they're trying to do that whole thing. Now, if you've chosen a person in structure, they get to define it. But you don't let people walk around and just insert themselves to try to, for their benefit, tell you what a verse means so that they might benefit that way. Do you understand where I'm going with this? Mostly it comes up with the fifth commandment where your parent will say to you, well, you need to come over and do what I say because that's what the commandment says. You need to honor your mother and father. Well, that's not what it means, and they don't get to define that. All right? Because they're trying to use it for manipulation. They're trying to use it to make you do something they want you to do that you don't want to do. And so the same thing can cause you to end up in codependency or enabling. Because you'll be made to feel guilty that you need to serve. Oh, I thought you're a whatever, and then so you should serve. The only person who can say those kind of things to you is a person who you have, that's your relationship, you know you're their servant, you know that you're trusting them, etc., and that they're not looking for their benefit. See, these are all people that are doing it. That's really should be your criteria. Whose benefit is it for? If you're in the scriptural understanding, if you're my servant, everything that I'm going to ask you to do is for your benefit. Think of that again. Everything that I'm going to ask you as my servant to do is not for me, it's for you. If the person who's asking you to do things, the benefit is for them, it's not a servant situation. Did you understand that? Maybe that's the simplest way to understand. This is why I like opening my mouth until it finally comes out in clarity, okay? He's going to help me sort it out as I'm saying it. If the thing that's happening whether someone's trying to tell you how to do the fifth commandment, how they're trying to do all these other things, if it's to their benefit, they got it wrong. So if you're my child and I'm going to throw the fifth commandment in your face because I'm going to say to you, look, you're having a real struggle understanding how to show honor and respect. And that's going to be a problem for you in general. So I'm okay with you not liking what I said. I'm okay with you not doing what I said, but you got to talk to me right. You got to learn to show enough honor and respect. You don't get to talk to me like that. That's to your benefit, not mine. So let's be careful with that. Everybody wants to try to use scripture to get you to do what they want because it's for their benefit. No. Don't let them do that. Did that make sense for everybody? Okay. That's a powerful one. Because otherwise you're going to be doing what they can to use your belief in Messiah, your belief in Torah against you to manipulate you. Don't be manipulated. I don't benefit from anything I teach you, except maybe if you just start doing it, I'll have less counseling to do. Okay? That's the only benefit I might get out of this. Okay? Everything else is for you, and even including the benefit that you won't need counsel. Okay? But the only benefit I get is that I might not have to spend as much time in counsel. And that's really the... So you have to say, is the person trying to get something for themselves, or is it for you? All right, next. So I really appreciate that question because it stirred that answer. I think it's important. All right,
awesome.
Go ahead.
Awesome. Somebody online wants to know, how does somebody accept you as their covering?
All right, so I guess this is a good question. This is one of those ones that should be questions at, and we put this in a little video, okay? This could even turn into an InFocus or whatever. Okay, covering. Let's understand that there's several different aspects of this. If you have chosen to be a part of this congregation and at large, right, this ministry, I would be your teacher, your rabbi. You don't need to have a formal discussion with me for that, all right? You can call and ask questions about the walk or anything that you would normally ask your teacher, your rabbi, your pastor, whatever about, right? That doesn't need you to ask me to do that. That's what I'm here to do. Now, we do offer from the idea of a covering for the ladies that don't have a father or a husband around to help them with the world life situations that are not halachic issues. Halacha is the Hebrew word for to walk, the walk. Okay? So it's not a Torah observance issue. But you normally would have a husband or a father to say, is this a good idea? Should I do this? Is this a bad idea? Should I wait? Should I do it now? Should I get something this different or more or less or what? Life decisions, changing jobs, moving, buying a big purchase, anything that's big that you want to make sure, but it has nothing to do with Torah observance. There's no spiritual aspect to it. It's just a decision you need to make, and you don't want to mess it up and put yourself in a problem. And so you generally would go to a husband or a father looking for that counsel that would help you to maybe say, maybe you missed something. Hey, did you think of this? Are you ready for that? This might happen if it goes wrong. Are you okay with that? Whatever, you know. A sounding board from wisdom, from advice, from a covering point of view. We can provide that for you by agreement. You have to ask, and then I'd have to agree. Okay? And so, by the way, if we do that, I don't, like a husband, say, do this, don't do that, but I will help you think it through so you make your own decision. I'm not going to tell you what to do. Some people are mad about that. Some people are mad because they're afraid I won't make the decision. Others are mad because I won't. See, I can't win, so it's okay. But I'm not going to make a decision for you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But if you call me because I have enough wide, you know, ranging experience of lots of different things, I will either give you counsel or direct you to a proper person who you should seek for counsel. I may send you to an accountant or to an attorney or to a doctor or whatever it is that you might need and say, listen, I really think you need to go get this expert advice that's outside of my scope of profession. Okay? But all I'm going to do is help you figure it through, think it through, process it through. I may ask you, hey, did you think about this? Have you considered that? Do you already have this arranged or whatever? And you may be like, ooh, wow, I forgot about that. Or you may, nope, I got that. And then, hey, great, then now you have what you need. You know, go ahead and make your decision. All right, so that's the idea of covering. All right? Now, for the men and the ladies who don't have, again, the covering, you can make sure from a covering point of view that you have that accountability, that person that you go to. Because ladies, you have it by default if you're married. Now, some of you, your husbands are not really up to that yet. Believe in them, encourage them, they'll get there. But that you have by default. But the men, you know, you need to be willing to come and find myself or one of the other leaders. Now, don't just, by the way, leaders are not just because they work on our staff. That doesn't make them leadership, okay? Leaders actually have a title and papers to go with it. And the leadership, as far as from the highest level point of view for counseling and anything in that area or above, starts with the elders and rabbis, not the shamashim, not anybody else who happens to be on the staff or the members. That doesn't mean that they can't help at times and give advice, but understand that you should be seeking from a leadership point of view the elder level, which we don't have any at the moment. We may have some soon, and the rabbi level. That is your leadership. So it's myself and Rabbi Tom, and that's it. Okay? Now, the shamashim do have authority. Like right now, they're hopefully keeping the chat room under control. They have authority that if they walk up to you because you're standing around and you look able-bodied and they want you to help set up some tables or move some things around or go do something for a widow or somebody or help with something physically, you should be able to give them respect for their authority to do things that are physically needed to do. They take care of the physical needs of the body. That is their gifting, all right? But they don't do it all by themselves. They may come and ask another able-bodied person to help them do it, okay? And so give them your respect if they ask you to help. If you're standing around during the service and we need something done physically and one of those guys comes up to you and says, hey, I need someone to help and do this, unless you have a real good reason to say no, you need to say yes. They have authority. They don't get the job of just doing it all themselves. They're not the ones responsible to do everything themselves. They're the ones who tend to recognize the needs faster than other people. That's how they got to be shamashes. They tend to be drawn to helping in those ways. And they also tend to do it all themselves and they need to ask for more help. But if they ask you, they have the authority to do so. As a matter of fact, I may be tasking them to notice and observe the able-bodied who never help. And it's a bunch of you. And you should be ashamed of that. There are some of you that will literally stand in doorways talking in the way while stuff is getting done instead of helping. My wife will literally walk in here with her arms overflowing with stuff and have to push past people blocking a door who see her there and get no help to help her with her stuff. And she's not the only one. I've seen a lot of you get that same experience. So some of you are nodding your heads. Meanwhile, some able-bodied guys are just standing there shooting the breeze in front of the door. And you think you're ready for Messiah to show up? You can't even be observant enough to pay attention that somebody might need some help? Yeah, some of you are going, wow, but it's true. It's happening all the time. We got one lady that finds herself every service, after services, almost always by herself in the kitchen cleaning up after the oneg because you people make your messes and you leave and you clean up almost nothing. Not only that, you leave half your stuff here. Like, I was like, well, how did you forget your stuff? Because we're just not focusing outside ourselves like we need to. You know, and she's not going to complain. She's going to get in there and do her stuff every week like she does, and we appreciate that. Okay, but you're here to serve, not to be served. Okay? As you're walking up that ladder, it starts off with servant. What can I do? All you people move here saying, oh, I'm coming to help, and then you do nothing. Or limited amounts. So help. You want to know what to do? You can ask any of the Rebbetzins. You can ask my wife. You can ask Manny or Dave or Billy or any of the other staff members. Well, you can ask especially your shamashim. And believe me, they'll have stuff for you to do. You want to help with something? Ask somebody. Say, I'm here. What can I do? But also, if you open your eyes, you can see stuff that needs to get done. You know, just have a heightened awareness. How many times have I had to tell you to have a higher level of awareness? Okay? We're still walking around in like this sort of half awake state. Wake up. You know, some of you get annoyed with me because I'm so awake, I'm not paying enough attention to you when you're right in front of me because I'm seeing 75 other things at the same time. I'm not worried about most of you ending up on that extreme. There's so much levels that you still need to go through to get there. But I'm seeing and hearing what's going on in the hallway and behind me and over there all at the same time. Why? Because somebody might need something that needs me to do. Or I might have to send somebody to go do. And I'll sometimes grab somebody. Hey, I'm in the middle of this conversation this way, and I'll grab this person. Hey, go over there. That over there is happening. And they're like, how did you know? Just, you know. Because you have to be awake. You have to be paying attention. That's the whole thing, is that, you know, it's so funny. All the New Age people are all talking about December 21st, this great new awakening. And everybody's still walking around asleep. Wake up. You got to wake up. You want to be Yeshua? Like, wake up. Get out there and help everybody. You know, pay attention. All right. And by the way, don't just impose yourself. Ask, would you like some help? Some people don't want to be helped, and that's okay. Nope, I got it. All right? So ask. You see somebody coming in with a bunch of stuff? Would you like some help? Oh, thank you. Here, take my stuff. All right?
So Regina Hoffman says, I would like to thank Rabbi for explaining forgiveness, reconciliation, and restoration. It has been a blessing in my moving forward in my walk with family and friends, learning, finding, and keeping my shalom.
Amen. Amen. Fantastic. Look, how many people did we have on today?
At one point, I saw 700 and something.
Okay, so with 700 people, we're never going to be able to get all those questions in anyway. Feel free to contact us. We have a phone number. We've got an email addresses and stuff. Look on our website. Contact us. And by the way, if you want to contact me, don't contact me directly. Go through one of these other guys because I will never see it. It's not your fault. It's not because I'm snubbing you or anything else. I don't look at my email like I should. I don't look at my Facebook messages almost at all. Some of you have been waiting me to accept your friend request for 4 years, okay? Because I haven't accepted a friend request probably in almost 4 years. You know, I haven't posted anything on my Facebook. I'm not going to just kill that Facebook page. It's like no point to it. I haven't posted anything in the years either. I never look at it. So, you know, just contact us. You'll get somebody like Rabbi Tom or Billy or Manny, and they'll be able to put you in touch with me. They have my calendar. They can put you on my calendar. I just increased the amount of availability, easy for me to say, the amount of availability by making the appointments 30 minutes instead of an hour. So I got twice as many spots now that you can possibly jump into if you need to talk to me. Okay. So anyway, just keep that all in mind, all right? Keep that all in mind. See, we did have people to come, like the nursing room and everything, so that worked out. All right, so we're going to close this thing up.